ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So everyone's going to chant together. 1825. Etan nirvijyamananam. Ichchantam akatovayam. Nir yoginam nirpaniti nityam. Harer Namanukirtanam. Someone else wants to chant? Etan nivijyamananam ichatam ukatovayam yoginam nirpanirnitam harernamanukirtanam. Okay, so translation, O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord, after the ways of the great authorities, is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and also those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. Obviously, as Kalakanta has pointed out by making this one of the verses from our memorization, this is one of the key verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. And so we'll read the purport and then discuss a little bit about the verse.
In the previous verse, the great necessity for attaining attachment to Mukunda has been accredited. There are different types of persons who desire to attain success in different varieties of pursuits. Generally, the persons are materialists who desire to enjoy the fullest extent of material gratification. Next to them are the transcendentalists, who have attained perfect knowledge about the nature of material enjoyment and thus are aloof from such an illusory way of life. More or less, they are satisfied in themselves by self-realization. Above them are the devotees of the Lord, who neither aspire to enjoy the material world nor desire to get out of it. They are after the satisfaction of the Lord Sri Krishna. In other words, the devotees of the Lord do not want anything on their personal account. If the Lord desires, the devotee can accept all sorts of material facilities, and if the Lord does not desire this, the devotee can leave aside all sorts of facility, even up to the limit of salvation.
If I could just make comments as we go along here. I think this is the first thing that we want to note about this verse and purport, and the Vedic literatures in general, is that the Vedas are approached by people with many different desires or viewpoints on life, trying to get different things out of the Vedas. And I think that sometimes in our approach, you might think, well, everyone approaches the Vedas like we do, devotees of the Lord. But actually, it's not a fact. There are many different types of transcendentalists, broadly broken down into impersonalist and personalist. And many different yogis and gyanis, all approaching the same body of literature with seeking a different result. And so first thing we need to note is that the answers given by Srimad Bhagavatam can satisfy all of them. And that's why it's particularly important that we take the viewpoint of the devotees of the Lord.
Nor are they self-satisfied because they want the satisfaction of the Lord only. In this verse, Sri Shukadev Goswami recommends the transcendental chanting of the holy name of the Lord. By offenseless chanting and hearing of the holy name of the Lord, one becomes acquainted with the transcendental form of the Lord. And then name gradually promotes one to the stage.
With the attributes.
Then
with the attributes.
With the transcendental nature of his pastimes, etc. Here it is mentioned that one should constantly chant the holy name of the Lord after hearing it from authorities. This means that hearing from the authorities is the first essential.
Well, that's a good break point there also to note that although there are all these different types of people approaching the Vedas, the Vedic knowledge, the best way to do it is to approach it through authorities. It's described here in the verse, the great authorities, after the way of the great authorities. And so, parampara, understanding in a bona fide system of guru and disciple is the way to get the real essence of the Vedas. And so that's being pointed out here and by Prabhupada in the purport.
Hearing of the holy name gradually promotes one to the stage of hearing about his form, about his attributes, his pastimes, and so on, and thus the necessity of the chanting of his glories develops successively. This process is recommended not only for the successful execution of devotional service, but also even for those who are materially attached.
According to Srila Sukadev Goswami, this way of attaining success is an established fact, concluded not only by him but also by other previous acharyas. Therefore, there is no need of further evidence. The process is recommended not only for the progressive students in different departments of ideological success, but also for those who are already successful in their achievement as fruitive workers, as philosophers, or as devotees of the Lord. Srila Jiva Goswami.
So just one point there. So now Prabhupada has introduced why, how we should approach the holy name through the authorities. And of course the verse recommends the constant chanting the holy name. So now there's going to be a description of the 10 offenses to the holy name. And those are being described because if this is the doubtless and fearless way by following the authorities and they recommend chanting the holy name of the Lord, then it becomes very crucial then how we chant the holy name of the Lord. And so therefore there's a description next in the rest of the purport is of the 10 offenses to chanting the holy name of the Lord, because if we can overcome them, then we can follow the path which is doubtless and fearless, given by the great authorities. So let's hear about the 10 offenses.
Srila Jiva Goswami instructs that chanting of the holy name of the Lord should be loudly done, and it should be performed offenselessly as well. As recommended in Padma Purana, one can deliver himself from the effects of all sins by surrendering himself unto the Lord. One can deliver himself from all offenses at the feet of the Lord by taking shelter of his holy name. But one cannot protect himself if one commits an offense at the feet of the holy name of the Lord. Such offenses are mentioned in the Padma Purana as being 10 in number. The first offense is to vilify the great devotees who have preached about the glories of the Lord. The second offense is to see the holy name of the Lord in terms of worldly distinction. The Lord is the proprietor of all universes, and therefore he may be known in different places by different names, but that does not in any way qualify the fullness of the Lord.
Any nomenclature which is meant for the Supreme Lord is as holy as the others because they are all meant for the Lord. Such holy names are as powerful as the Lord, and there is no bar for anyone in any part of the creation to chant and glorify the Lord by the particular name of the Lord as it is locally understood. They are all auspicious, and one should not distinguish such such names of the Lord as material commodities. The third offense is to neglect the orders of the authorized acharyas or spiritual masters. The fourth offense is to vilify scriptures or Vedic knowledge.
The fifth offense is to define the holy name of the Lord in terms of one's mundane calculation. The holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord himself, and one should understand that the holy name of the Lord is to be non-different from him.
The sixth offense is to interpret the holy name. The Lord is not imaginary, nor is his holy name. There are persons with a poor fund of knowledge who think the Lord to be an imagination of the worshiper, and therefore think his holy name to be imaginary. Such a chanter of the name of the Lord cannot achieve the desired success in the matter of chanting the holy name. The seventh offense is to commit sins intentionally on the strength of the holy name. In the scriptures, it is said that one can be liberated from the effects of all sinful actions simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord.
One who takes advantage of this transcendental method and continues to commit sins of the expectation of neutralizing the effects of sins by chanting the holy name of the Lord is a greater offender at the feet of the holy name. Such an offender cannot purify himself by any recommended method of purification. In other words, one may be sinful man before chanting the holy name of the Lord, but after taking shelter in the holy name of the Lord and becoming immune, one should strictly restrain oneself from committing sinful acts with the hope that his method of chanting the holy name will give him protection.
The eighth offense is to consider the holy name of the Lord and his chanting method to be equal to some material auspicious activity. There are various kinds of good works for material benefits, but the holy name and his chanting are not mere auspicious holy services. Undoubtedly, the holy name is the holy service, but he should never be utilized for such purposes. Since the holy name and the Lord are of one and the same identity, one should not try to bring the holy name into the service of mankind. The idea is that the Supreme Lord is the supreme enjoyer. He is no one's servant or order supplier. Similarly, since the holy name of the Lord is identical with the Lord, one should not try to utilize the holy name for one's personal service.
The ninth offense is to instruct those who were not interested in chanting the holy name of the Lord about the transcendental nature of the holy name. If such instruction is imparted to an unwilling audience, that act is considered to be an offense at the feet of the holy name. The tenth offense is to become uninterested in the holy name of the Lord, even after hearing of the transcendental nature of the holy name. The effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord is perceived by the chanter as liberation from the conception of false egoism. False egoism is exhibited by thinking oneself to be the enjoyer of the world and thinking everything in the world to be meant for the enjoyment of oneself only. The whole materialistic world is moving under such false egoism of I, mine, but the factual effect of chanting the holy name is to become free from such misconceptions.
Okay, thank you. That's a very powerful last sentence, isn't it? That the factual effect of chanting the holy name is to become free from such misconceptions, this false ego. So we can know, can't we, the real status of our own chanting by that sentence. How we're avoiding the ten offenses, how we're following the great authorities, and how we're making progress in spiritual life just by this idea about how we're becoming free from this conception of I and mine. And so I think that that sentence, you know, caps up a very, you know, very instructive purport here by Srila Prabhupada about the process of Krishna consciousness and also about the Srimad Bhagavatam. Does anybody know what a preface is? Can you give me a definition of a preface to a book, what it means, a preface? Anybody? A preface, Madhumati, you want to give a preface? Since we heard this example yesterday, from Hanumat Prakshaka Swami in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And I thought it was very good, so, and I think it's appropriate here. He was talking about the Srimad Bhagavatam and what the meaning of a preface is. Because in a very real sense, the Srimad Bhagavatam starts in the second canto, not the first canto. Right? The first canto, to a large extent, can be considered like a preface to the entire work, meaning that it talks about, it sort of sets up why the work was written, who wrote it, under what circumstances it was written, and what it hopes to achieve. These things are the preface to any work. And so, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we get these kind of things set up for us. And now, in the second canto, the work actually starts. So, what is the setup of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Why are we getting this type of instruction Sukadeva Goswami, where he describes his own attachment to the holy name of the Lord and all the verses that we've read up to this point? Yes. Yuga Dharma. Yes, in a sense, what's happened? What's happened time-wise? Krishna has left the planet, right? And so he's left the planet, and so there's a need of an incarnation to protect the devotees, right? And so what does it describe at the end of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam? That Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation of the Lord. And so, yes, that's one thing that's happening there. Yes, anything else that's happening there in the first canto that sort of sets up the entire Srimad Bhagavatam? Yes? Yes, this is very essential. Maharaj Parikshit, he's been cursed to die. He's going to die in 7 days. And he's decided to, you know, fast until death. And he meets with the sages in Naibhirisharanya and says, well, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? What's the best thing that can be done? And so that question, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is actually an answer to that question. What is the duty of a man that's about to die? The whole Srimad Bhagavatam can be seen as a response to that question. Anything else? Baba Singh. Right. I mean, that's also there in the first canto, isn't it? Because Sukadeva Goswami arrives. Yes? Okay. He said to hear from authorized authorities. And so that's what happens in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto. Sukadeva Goswami arrives in the midst of so many sages, great sages and everything, but they accept him as the authorized person to hear from. Therefore, he's seated on the Vyasasan, and even his own father, Vyasadeva, is sitting in the audience because he is recognized as the bona fide authority to hear from. So yes, that's there as well. Anything else anyone can think of? I mean, that's pretty good. I think that's a pretty good setup, you know, for the instruction that happens. And it's interesting that we're in the 11th. This is the 11th verse of the second canto. And doesn't this verse sort of say it all? That's the answer right there. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from all material desire, those who desire desirous of all material enjoyment, and those who are self-satisfied by dint of transcendental knowledge. So that's the answer. So why don't we just close up our books and go home right now? Why is there something more that needs to be there? Yes, Naveen. Right, yeah, we don't know the holy name completely itself. Right, that's very good. That's very good. We need more instruction in that regard. Yes. Yes, exactly. That's what the purport is about here. Prabhupada spends, you know, 2.5 pages saying that, yes, this is the answer, the chanting the holy name, but there are offenses, and so we need to know them. So we need some time to work on that. Kalakanta, you have something you want to say? Okay. Anything else? Yes. Right. The Bhagavatam is full of descriptions of devotees of the Lord and how they depended on chanting of the holy name and how they crossed over all the material miseries and how they actually, examples of how they were successful. Can you give some idea of from the later pastimes of the Bhagavatam how this idea about the constant chanting of the holy name saved them? Are there some examples? Balabhasain has one?
There's a story of Ajamil.
The story of Ajamil, Balabhasain says. Okay, great.
The story of how Ajamil, at the time of death, even though he had been a greatly sinful person his entire life, due to his previous devotional service that he had engaged in before he fell under the influence of the material energy, he was fortunate enough to be able to name his son after the Lord, Lord Narayan. Mm-hmm. So his entire life he was calling the name of, unknowingly, not realizing that he was actually calling the Lord's name when he would be calling his son. He would become so covered over. And at the moment of death, he was about to leave his body. Yamadutas came to take him away. And because he was calling for, he felt no shelter except his son. He called out for his son, Narayan, Narayan. And at that time, the Vishnu Dutas appeared on the scene and stopped the Yamadutas from taking him away.
Right. And what is the key about his calling his son at that time?
That he wasn't offensive in his chanting.
Exactly. He wasn't offensive in his chanting. So therefore, he was delivered. Right, very good. Any other examples from the Bhagavatam? Yeah.
Another pastime is exclusively for the holy name, but there are other pastimes where holy name is also very prominent, like Dhruva Maharaj leaving this planet. When the Vishnudas came, then he was confused like how he should treat them. Then he remembered the instruction that simply chanting the holy names makes every process complete. So he simply chanted, and that's why he did all his activities there. And also, who is the Acharya of demons? Sukracharya. So when Lord asked him that what went wrong, so there also he glorifies the holy names, that if everything goes wrong, simply chanting your names makes everything perfect. So these pastimes gives little instruction about holy names.
Right. Sukracharya gave that answer in relation to Bali Maharaj. Right. Okay, and also Dhruva Maharaj, when he was in the forest, he was chanting what during his meditation? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, right? So this is what we chant every day as our own study of the Bhagavatam. So yes, these are examples. Any other ones that anyone can think of very quickly? Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj, yes, he was tortured in so many ways. And what was his shelter? What did he do? He was constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord. And that way he was delivered. Yes, the Bhagavatam study, you know, from this point on, expands on this verse and the glories of chanting the holy name of the Lord. Now, just so that we can have some idea of what type of perfection can be achieved, I wanted to present to you some questions and answers that were a part of this book, which is Sri Bhakti Vinod Vani Vaibhava, which is a compilation of Bhakti Vinod Thakur's instructions answering questions. Just like this is an answer to a question, the Bhagavatam is an answer to a question. So there are a lot of questions that a disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had, not that he had, but that he used and found responses to those questions in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's works, and then are compiled into this book. Just to give some idea, because we're talking about achieving perfection through chanting the holy names, we're going to get back to the 10 offenses. But what is the perfection that can be achieved? And so these are some questions and answers in those regard. In that regard. So the question is, when do we achieve apana dasa or swarup siddhi? Does anybody know what swarup siddhi is? Swarup City is, yes, Kalakanta?
When you attain your eternal spiritual body.
Right, when you attain your eternal spiritual body, your Swarup City. So, in essence, this question is asking, how do you achieve your Swarup City? And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, a devotee reaches Apanadasa when he gradually remembers the Lord's holy name, meditates on the Lord's form, qualities, and pastimes, and absorbs himself in the mellows of Krishna by entering into Krishna's pastimes. In this state, he meditates on Krishna's eternal pastimes 24 hours a day. When a devotee is fully absorbed in this state, he attains Swarup City. So, attaining our Swarup City stems from what? Chanting the holy name. Chanting the holy name. It says a devotee reaches Apanadasa when he gradually remembers the Lord's holy name. Remembers. Well, what's the manifestation of your remembering? Chanting, right? So chanting, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that actually it's through the chanting of Hare Krishna that we achieve all perfection. Not that there's some other thing that we have to do, or there's kind of a famous story in ISKCON about a devotee that was in Mayapur and he went to somebody and found out what his Swarup City was, you know, and he found out he was a peacock, you know, in the spiritual world. And so then he was in his room and somebody saw him, he was like, so, not that way, by constantly chanting the holy name. This is how we achieve this. Now, that's further explained here by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says that it's also, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's instructions, and he's talking about achieving perfection, and he describes it in this way. One who engages faithfully in the worship of the holy name and thus attains the mercy of a sadhu becomes indifferent to other things and comes to understand his eternal identity, Nitya Swarupa. This is called bhakti yoga in its highest form. One can attain all perfection if one follows the process in the proper sequence. This is interesting, in a proper sequence. What has Srila Prabhupada said about Srimad Bhagavatam and the proper sequence? Can anyone say? He warns us against jumping ahead, right? That we read the Srimad Bhagavatam from the first canto through the tenth canto, not that we immediately jump to the tenth canto, try to understand Krishna's pastimes and how we're situated there somehow or another. No, in the proper sequence. So, one who worships the holy name and follows a sadhu, which means the same thing we're finding in a verse here today, following the ways of the great authorities, that is the proper sequence. He goes on to say, the holy name is the only dharma accepted by Vaishnavas. From the holy name blossoms form, qualities, and activities. So if we want to know, enter into the Leela of the Lord, that means we're engaging with Him in terms of His form, His activities, His qualities. And we achieve that, the only dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, is the holy name. And all those things are gradually revealed to us through the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Any question?
There are some examples of devotees who took to other processes. If the holy name is so important, did it?
Okay, well, that's what I mentioned at the beginning. Why, you know, are there examples of devotees who took to other processes? And who are those devotees?
Prahlad Maharaj, he was praying, right? But is praying also like chanting?
Oh, you mean the other of the nine processes of devotional service?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, I thought you meant like someone that took to yoga or jnana or something like that. Because there are also examples of that in the Bhagavatam. But those things, the nine processes of devotional service, where do they begin? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So first we hear. And who do we hear from? Yeah, following the ways of the great authorities. And then what do we do once we've heard? Kirtanam, we chant. And so all the nine processes of devotional services develop from there. So they're also based on hearing and chanting. Srila Prabhupada himself, when they installed the deities in Vrindavan, they opened the Krishna Balaram Mandir, Kalakanta was there when they did that. I had to stay back that year. But Prabhupada said they had brought in Brahmins and they did elaborate rituals and everything like that for installing the deities. But Prabhupada made the comment that actually the whole thing could have been accomplished just with the chanting of the holy name. So all these other processes that we engage in are dependent on, based on the foundation of the holy name of the Lord. Okay? So I think I was going to read this last statement by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says, the holy name is the bud of the flower of divine love and is the very abode of astonishing mellows. Such is the power he manifests when his holy name starts to blossom a little further. It then reveals his own divine form and qualities. Thus my heart is abducted and taken directly to Krishna. Blossoming fully, the flower of the holy name takes me to Braja and reveals to me his own love dalliance. This name gives me my own eternal body, spiritual body, keeping me right by Krishna's side and completely destroys everything related to this mortal frame of mine. That's Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur from the Srinam Mahatmya. So this is the power of the holy name. Now, such a wonderful gift that we've been given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by Srila Prabhupada, why is it that we're not there with Krishna in the eternal abode, realizing his name, form, qualities, everything else? Why is it that we're not there? Who can say? Offenses, yes. We're not there because our chanting is not pure at this stage. And so our task then is to overcome the 10 offenses that are mentioned here in the purport to today's verse. So does anybody have a favorite of the, not favorite in the sense that you like to do it, but a striking one of the offenses that you feel that is important and needs to be overcome? Naveen?
11th offense.
The 11th offense. 10's not enough.
Inattentive chanting, that is the 11th offense.
Okay. It's also offensive to be inattentive while chanting.
And because of that, all of the 10 offenses. Yeah.
Right.
I have a question. Can I ask?
Yes.
So, if we are the doer of, if we are the one who chants the holy name, then why is that when we are doing so many anarthas, the holy name goes away? It just goes away. We don't want to chant.
Well, are we the doer of the chants? We have to cultivate a desire to serve Krishna. And if we have that desire in our heart, and that desire is then placed before the spiritual master, the sadhu, the great authorities that are mentioned here, then they will mercifully give us instruction. And so on the strength of their instruction, then we begin to endeavor. But if we commit offenses, even though your question is good because it points out our position. Our position is that we do have some desire. Everyone's here by choice. We have some desire to serve Krishna. We have some desire to chant the holy name given to us by our spiritual master. But because we're not completely pure, we are unsteady. This is described in the book, Madhurya Kandambini, by, I think, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He explains that in the beginning stages, our devotional service is unsteady. And it's unsteady because of our desire is not strong. And if we don't have a strong desire, see, desire is a form of sincerity. So you have some kind of sincerity. That's why I say it represents us. We have some sincerity. But we're not completely pure. Our desire may not be completely strong. And therefore, it's manifest in unattentive chanting or neglect in other ways in terms of these 10 offenses. And so therefore, we don't get the constant taste. Again, First Canto Srimad Bhagavatam sets this up. It says that ahaituki apratiyata yayatma supersediti. If your devotional service is unmotivated and uninterrupted, then it's completely satisfying to the self. So we don't find it completely satisfying to the self because of the offenses. We're motivated or it interrupts our chanting. And therefore, we don't have that constant taste. And we're in initial stages, we are unsteady, as described by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Okay? So, favorites among the holy name, the offenses. Yeah. A question? Okay.
Regarding this desire, so does desire come by chanting or desire one has to cultivate by hearing and what's the process of cultivating any
desire? Comes by association. Desire comes by, so you associate with the devotees. This is described by Srila Rupa Goswami. Adau Shraddha Tada Saru Sangha. He describes like this the process of how devotional service develops from the initial stages all the way through Krishna Prema. And it begins with a little faith that, oh, let me go and, you know, take Krishna lunch or something. You know, let me go over and hear what they have to say. Because some people don't have that. They think, oh, don't go there. They're the devil, you know. You know, don't hear it. You can't hear it, you know. But people are a little open, you know. Okay, well, what is that's due to their piety. They're a little open. And so then they associate. And then by association, they go, oh, let me chant. Let me take prasad. So association is how our desire develops. And so therefore, Krishna sends his devotees. And they come and they give us their association. And they help us create the desire to become Krishna conscious. So it comes through association.
We have so much association over here, so still like, why are we...
Association is something that's going to be effective over a long period of time. We should not be impatient and therefore commit offenses to the holy name by thinking that it's not powerful. The description, that's one of the offenses, isn't it? To not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name, even after receiving so many instructions in this regard. And so that's due to that unsteadiness or lack of faith in our heart that we don't feel that, well, I am making progress. But what did I say right at the beginning, which is the key to understanding we're making progress, which is described in this verse? The last sentence of the purport? If we become free from false ego, we can perceive how we're making advancement. And we do become free from false ego in different ways, the conception of I and mine. I think one of the things that most devotees, the first experience they have with that, I know the first experience I had, there was our godbrother Subhananda. I was in the Washington DC temple before I came to join the library party. I just joined the temple and he was there and dressed as a devotee with a shaved head, he first took me out, you know, into the, you know, we went to the store or something to get something. So walking down the street with a shaved head and a dhoti and everything like that, wow, you know, that was like freedom from false ego, you know. Here you go, you know, I'm no longer, you know, this beard, this hair, you know, this hippie dress or whatever, you know. I'm a devotee of the Lord. And so that's a sense of freedom from the false ego, that you're ready to do that, because not everyone's ready to do that, you know. People join the temple 20 years later, you know, oh, I haven't decided to cut my hair yet, you know. And it's attachment to the false conception of the self. So as we become free from this conception of I and mine, that's the effect of the chanting of the holy name in our lives. And so we can perceive it ourselves. I was asking about anybody. I guess no one has any favorite offenses.
I
you have a favorite offense? Okay. He has a favorite offense. Let's hear what it is.
I would say I'm most fearful of these offenses.
Okay.
That is number three, offense to your guru, and offense to devotees, number one. And the reason I have that, all other offenses you can rectify by chanting holy names again. Like when you fall down the earth, you take help of earth and again rise up. So chanting holy names can rectify the offenses to holy names, but the offenses to guru and the devotees, you need to take their mercy. So that's why they are the most fearful offenses.
Right. That's a very serious offense. Actually, there's a whole magazine, this Krishna Katamrita, that talks about the mad elephant offense. And mad elephant offense means that like a mad elephant goes into a garden and starts walking around, stomping around, swinging his trunk. It destroys everything. So offenses to guru, offenses to the Vaishnavas is like that to our devotional creeper. It can completely uproot it. And so we should never underestimate this offense of being offensive to others, and always be very careful in our association.
There is one dangerous story, frightening story. Rupa Goswami was meditating on Krishna's pastime once, and he saw in his meditation that Radharani is pulled by the branch by the Krishna, and he laughed seeing that scene. And then there a limping devotee happens to walk in front of him, and he thought that he's laughing at him. And as soon as he thought, his ecstatic mood went away. And he was asking Sanatana Goswami what happened. Then he said, you must have offended some devotee unknowingly. So even unknowing offense is so powerful that it can take away your ecstasies.
Yeah, we were talking about how chanting reveals all these things in your heart. Offenses covers them in your heart. Yes. So you had to... Yes.
I have one thing to ask about what you just said. Do we have to worry about that when we go to Vrindavan and the spiritual abode, we'll be having to be really careful to make offenses in our eternal spiritual form, you know?
Actually, that's a very interesting question, because that's practically the same question I also asked when I was a new devotee. I was just leaving Gainesville here, driving back to Washington, D.C. with Rupanuga Prabhu, and our car broke down. And so some devotees went off to fix it, and just he and I were in a car. So I thought, well, let me take this opportunity to ask the sannyasi, he was sannyasi at that time, ask him a question that's on my mind. And so I asked him, how we know what to do when we get to the spiritual world? You know, which is similar to what you're saying, you know. And he kind of laughed, and he said that by qualifying yourself to getting there, you'll know what to do. So when we enter into the Lord's pastimes, we enter in only after being completely purified and trained in our service and knowing exactly what to do. And that includes not creating offenses to others and not being a crasher to the party. You can't gate crash, you know, Goloka Vrindavan, you know, and be a sticking out like a sore thumb there. You know, only people are allowed there who know what to do, how to act, how to serve Krishna. And if there's some question, who's always with us there in the spiritual world? Yeah, spiritual master guides us. You know, it's not like we're just on our own there. The spiritual master is there to engage us in the service of the Lord. Not that we become a direct servant ourselves.
That's my favorite. Okay, now. As well. Committing sinful activities and then trying to repent by thinking that it nullifies, so why don't I just... To me, practically, it seems like even if you're not consciously doing that you're doing it anyways if you're taking up chanting, you know?
Right.
So I'm wondering the intricacies of that, whether it's something consciously or just...
Well, I mean, consciously, obviously, is offensive, right? You know, someone's thinking, I'm going to take advantage. This is a greatly powerful thing. I can purify myself of all sins. And so I can sin, and then I know I'll be purified. That kind of conscious manipulation, or trying to make the Lord your servant, or you use his power to gratify your own senses, that's obviously offensive. But I think you point out something that's very interesting, and that is that how much do we do this subconsciously? How much do we have this offensive mentality? We may think I'm weak, therefore I engage in these types of activities which are prohibited. But subtly we may be thinking the same kind of offensive thought that, well, I know that I'll be purified by continuing to chant the holy name. So somehow or another it becomes justified in our mind. So I think that that type of sincerity and depth of thought has to be part of our lives as devotees. Not just that these offenses are superficial and they can be seen only in that way, but no, this kind of depth and questioning our own motives, trying to understand. And therefore, I think, you know, you'll find the great devotees, they describe themselves as so fallen in so many ways. Why? Because they understand, you know, the complete, you know, anything other than complete supplication to Krishna and service to Krishna, you know, completely dedicated, you know, 110%, anything other than that is such an abominable state to them. They realize, oh, because they're doing something for themselves. As Prabhupada says here in the purport, that nothing should be done for oneself. Didn't he say something like that in the purport today? I think he did. Yes, exactly. There, that's exactly the point. Thank you, Ankush. He says that, he talks about the devotees. Nor are they self-satisfied. They want the satisfaction of the Lord only. What a statement in terms of people that approach the Vedas and Vedantists and everything like that. Everyone's trying to be self-satisfied. That's the goal. So you're desireless. You're completely self-satisfied. The devotees don't even want that. They simply want the satisfaction of the Lord only. Even if it means they have to go to hell. That's also described in sixth canto. Narayana prak sarve nakutaschana bibhyate swarga apavarga narakeshu apituryarta darshana. Devotee doesn't care whether he goes to heaven or hell. He only wants to satisfy the Supreme Lord. Yes, Kalagandhu. Okay.
Not having complete faith in the chanting. And we see that in ourselves when we feel like frustrated with our situation. It's, oh, I don't like this situation for serving Krishna. I want to be in this other situation. Or when we're somehow thinking, we're forgetting that Krishna puts us in situations for our purification. So that's the way that manifests, not having complete faith. Okay, Krishna, whatever you want to do with me. You know, like saying, having no separate desire but the satisfaction of the Lord.
Well, I think that's nice, and I like what you say, because it indicates that there are a lot of these are like seeds. These 10 offenses are like seeds, and other things manifest from them. You know, other things manifest from them, and so when we can begin to see like that you know, my behavior, it might not be, you know, right in the book as one of the 10 offenses, but when I can relate it back to its development from one of the 10 offensive, then I think we're getting that real introspective kind of thing in our hearts and minds that we need to do to purify ourselves, because we're taking a look at ourselves, you know, through the lens of the offenses. So that's very good. Yes.
But I want to know, where would that fall into, like the offenses or chanting the holy name?
Yeah. Not following the orders of the spiritual master, isn't that one of them? Committing sinful activities on the strength of chanting, and also not following the orders of the spiritual master. The spiritual master prescribes so many things for us to do, and you might say, well, I don't find that in the Vedas and things like that. But if it's coming from the spiritual master, that's by the way of, as described here, by the way of the great authorities, then not following that or neglecting that, then that becomes an offense, because it blocks our ability to chant the holy name.
So my question would be, so is it better for people who not to chant, who's not following those four regulative principles? Because
no.
You know, you have people who don't follow the four regulative principles. They may, you know, still do intoxication or still have illicit sex, but they chant the holy name.
Right. So there's a difference in chanting the holy name when it comes to the point of initiation. When chanting the holy name is for everybody. And actually, one of the things I wanted to read, I don't know if I have time to read here, but one of the offenses here that I liked or wanted to talk about was this idea about the holy name being applicable in all places, all times, all cultures, the local names of the Lord. And so everyone's encouraged to chant, but then there does come the point of taking Vaishnava initiation. And at that point, you make a commitment, and so you are voluntarily putting yourself and holding yourself to a higher standard. So we don't say, don't chant the holy name. We want everyone to chant the holy name, no matter what they're doing. But once we take vows, then we are also putting ourselves, you know, to be more responsible, to a higher level of responsibility. And so why don't we end with that? Thank you. Grantarashi Mad Bhagavatam.